Elias L. from Rancho Mirage.
I am an alcoholic. My name is Elias. And first of all, I want to thank Larry for inviting me to participate in my own recovery. And for those who care to join me, would you please join me in the third step prayer? God, I offer myself to thee to do with me and to do with me as thy will. Leave me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Amen. Thank you. I come from Rancho Mirage, the desert, and finding the most beautiful woman in the whole desert to accompany me. And I brought her in here, and I hope you agree with me. Thank you, sweetheart. She's my wife, and without her, you would have a different speaker tonight. Thank you. You know, I mentioned the word recovery, and I'm going to use it again and again, so I want to be very clear on what I mean when I say recovery. I had this sponsor at the very beginning, and when I kept hearing the word recovery, I went and I asked him, and I said, what is it? What does it mean? And in his loving way, you know, he said, well, you go to the dictionary and you look for the definition. And as a matter of fact, why don't you write an essay about it? And being the smart pants that I am, and always looking for the loophole, the shortcut, which has been always one of my character defects from always. So as he mentioned the word suggestion, I said, well, I'm going to start with the word suggestion. Maybe I can get away from the whole thing. And the dictionary, as you know, defines suggestion as a subtle way, as a subtle form of command. And when I read it that way, I knew I was dumb, you know. So I went again to the dictionary, and in recovery, what the dictionary says, the way it defines it, is that recovery is a process. And that is the key word. Recovery is a process, not an event. So it follows saying recovery is the process through which something of value is extracted out of something previously considered of no value. And I don't know in your life, but in my life, that is exactly what happened. In my experience with a lot of people that I've had the honor of participating in their recovery, I have seen that. I have seen people that come to meetings and they are fresh from treatment centers or something like that, and you know, they can hardly walk, they're still doing the Torazine shuffle, you know, and they don't speak, you give them only a quarter cup of coffee because the hand is like that. But 30 days pass, and now they can at least get half a cup, you know, and they kind of smile to you. And within 90 days, you know, they're okay. They're actually even helping, you know, in the coffee commitment, and they're serving coffee. And I see all kinds of things like that. So at the very beginning, when I was so reluctant to get this program, one thing I did was I kept watching people like that. And I said, well, if that works for them, maybe if I really apply myself to this program, maybe that will happen the same thing to me. And that's how my identification with the program started. I believe that identification is very, very important. I used to be a professional spectator. I would come to your meetings, and for me, if you made me laugh, if you entertained me, it was a good meeting. And if you didn't, it was a terrible meeting. Maybe I shouldn't come to this one, you know. And again, my loving sponsor suggested again that I take a commitment. And the moment I took a commitment, something marvelous started happening. All of a sudden, that meeting became my meeting. It was not the meeting I was going to, but my meeting. And I started getting, you know, that identification. Now I started, you know, there was always this thing with me. It took me 15 years to get my first year of sobriety. And, well, I'll talk about that later, but I've done inventories about it. But the main thing was that I was looking for anything that I could not identify with. And I would use that as an excuse to get out of here. I would hear stories that I said, man, that's not me. I heard people saying that they went for cigarettes one night. They told their wife, I'm going to buy cigarettes, and they came back a week later. Or, you know, they would wake up in a hotel room somewhere, and they had to go down to the lobby to buy a paper to know what was the town they were in and what was the date. And I was not like that, not at all. So I would say, I'm not like you guys. I hope the program will work for you, but I'm not here. So I would leave. What kept happening over and over again is that every time I would come back with arrows in my back, I had already done a few of those things that I said, that's not me. And it was not until the very last part, before I came here for the last time, that for the previous about 3 years before that situation, I kept associating myself with really bad guys. I mean, gone caring kind of guys and organized kind of people that I don't recommend it to anybody. So I was hanging with all of them. They were my pals. We were having fun, you know, and we were doing a lot of money and things like that. And one day, as I was crossing the border here in San Isidro, all of a sudden, this stupid dog started scratching my car. And within seconds, people from all different branches of government, you know, were around my car. But I was dressed like this because that was part of the show, you know. And they came to apologize for the dog scratching my car. That's how good I look, I guess. And they moved the dog. The dog wouldn't want, but they pulled it out. And the moment the dog left by himself, you know, and all of a sudden the dog is on top of my my trunk and scratching again. So by this time I had nothing to say, you know. They came and, of course, what comes later is I'm in cuffs, and I don't know how they found 60-something kilos of things. I don't know how that got there, but I realized that my life was completely over from that moment on. And they sent me to jail, and to make it kind of short, they had just started with this diversion program, and my wife and Larry enlightened my lawyer on this program, and thanks to that program, they got me to go either, they gave me like you, they gave me a program. They said, you can either go a year and a half to this program, or you can go 5 years to jail. And after careful deliberation, I decided to take the program, you know. So they as I was leaving, to be free, the INS came to me, because I don't know if you've noticed, but I have a little bit of an accent. And the accent comes from, I was first generation in Mexico, from parents from Europe, and it makes me Polish, Russian, Mexican, Jew. And since 2 years ago, I am a proud U.S. citizen, you know. And I tell you, it's so obvious why Alcoholics Anonymous happened in this country. There is no other country in the world that would have allowed each one of us to have our own God, our own higher power. Not only that, but they encourage you to have your own higher power. In other countries, they chop your head for much less than that. So I'm really proud to be here, that this country allows this kind of situation to happen, and I'm trying to do my little part in it. But anyway, going back to that situation, I was ready to leave, to go free, when the INS caught me, and they sent me to, I don't know if you're aware, but the U.S. government has deportation centers all over the states that are like concentration camps, you know. So they grabbed me and they put my you-know-what over there, and they wanted to send my bones back to Mexico. And again, my wife and Larry, they found Perry Mason. I don't know where they got him from. And, you know, the INS has their own everything, their own force, their own court system. So you go there and you go to court, they want to deport you, you have to convince them that it was not you. And we went over there. We had the gigantic love. God started working in my life in that part by giving us a judge that afterwards, Larry and me, we are absolutely convinced that he is one of us in this program. And of course, you know, at one point he turned to Larry and he said, "Mr. Wilson." And you know, Larry is not Wilson. But but he was asking me, how can I be sure? If I allow you to stay in my country, how can I be sure that you're not going to drink again and tomorrow you're going to be driving and killing my grandchildren? He was old. And I was ready to come up with one of my smart answers. And Larry somehow gave me the eye, you know, that don't. And I simply told the judge, you know, I said, "I really cannot guarantee that I'm not going to drink. I can guarantee that I am not going to drink today. That's all I can guarantee." And it seemed that he really liked that part. And I don't know where it came from. Those were not my words. I'm a con artist, and I would come up with some other kind of answer. But it worked. That year, there were over 400,000 people that were deported out of this country, and only two people stay here. I was one of them. And I'm really glad that it happened, and I'm really proud to be in this country again one more time. The other thing that kept happening to me in the meeting, I came finally to that program, and they kept testing me every single day for a year and a half. And the thing was that if they would find one test dirty, they would send me to prison for 5 years, no questions asked. Now, this alcoholic needed that kind of an incentive to stay sober, to recover. I don't recommend it. I don't wish it to anybody. But, you know, it came a moment that I did ask, that moment of clarity that you were talking about, that I just couldn't stop. There was no way for me to stop drinking and using. And I just told God, you know, I cannot stop. Please help me. Now, you have to understand that when one asks God to help, one should not, should know not to put lines of demarcation on God. Because when I asked God to help me, this is how it helped me. He stopped me in San Isidro and got me into all these situations, you know. So that point, I keep finding it. It has keep on evolving in my life. And that is that somehow, at one point or another, my mind starts playing games on me and starts deciding what I need next. It doesn't matter how much I have, how much sobriety I have on me. But it starts kind of saying that I want this or I want that or I should have that. And then I go to God and I start asking God for that something. So what happens there is that I start taking back that position of God. My biggest problem in this program was that I always thought I was God. And I was doing very good according to me. But what was happening is that I had a God. Only I had a God like in what you taught me about, that we have toolboxes. Well, I had a God over there. He was very powerful, but it was still under my command. And I would bring him up whenever I needed something like really big. Then I would bring him up. I think the 12 and 12 says that it's like the Bush League pitcher or something like that. And I kept using God like that without even knowing. Today, thank God, I do know that there is a God and it's not me. And not knowing that, not knowing that I am not God, it allows me to be me. I pray and meditate. And I stopped doing it for a while because one of these situations that I said, God doesn't need my prayers. God is God without my prayers. What I didn't know is that I am the one that needed those prayers. I am the one that has to remind myself at all times that there is a God and that it's not me. And that is one way that every single day I keep doing. First thing I do when I wake up, I am already programmed. Immediately I said the third step prayer, then the seventh step prayer, and then I go to the bathroom. And before that, when I was drinking and using, what I would do is I open my eyes, and just like Bob Earl said, my mind immediately says, hey, good morning, man. Welcome back. I was waiting for you. You know, we left things undone last night, and by the time I go from my bed to the bathroom, I had already told myself so many bad things of how bad I was and how the world was going to destroy me one more day and how come I couldn't kill myself doing what I did the night before and now I have to face the world one more time and blah, 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 blah. And that doesn't happen anymore. There is no more extra voices in my head. There's nobody but my voice and God's voice. And I love it that way. It gives me peace. And I never knew about peace until I started coming to this program, until I started sponsoring people. For me, sponsoring people has been the most incredible adventure I've ever had. I go through the steps with them, and without a fail, you know, every time they start coming with their step, and I start realizing that I had missed AY, you know, 1, 2, and 3, and 4 steps, and then I remember about things that I had done, that they were still back there, and I never brought them back. So all these things, they've been with me all the time. I love to sponsor people. I look for people to sponsor. I don't wait for them to come to me. I welcome if they come to me, but when newcomers, they say they're newcomers in meetings, I go to them in the break, introduce myself, ask them if they have a sponsor, and I hope everybody here has a sponsor. If not, you're really missing the program. Just for my own, can by a show of hands, how many people here are in the first 5 years of sobriety? There's a lot of people in the first 5 years. I started getting sober here. I used to go to this meeting in Chula Vista, the South Bay Pioneer, and there was this guy over there, the elder, that his name was Motorcycle Bill or something like that. I guess a lot of people know him.
Don?
Okay. And he always used to say that in the first 5 years of sobriety, that it's called new sobriety, because it takes 5 years for the fog to start getting away from your head. And that was my very first resentment in this program. Because I had a year, I thought, you know, in South Bay Pioneers, they have this Bob and Bill, the pictures here, and I got up to get my cake, and man, I thought that, what are they doing here, you know? It was like, it was my party here. And but it's absolutely truth. And not only that is true, but when I got to be 5 years, then they told me that it was 10 years, you know. And you can never win with the old-timers. They always get you one step. They're always one step ahead of me, at least. I want you to know, I've mentioned Larry several occasions, and I want you to know that, as I said, without Larry, there is absolutely no way that I would be speaking here. And the way I met Larry is another form to show you how God was working in my life. I used to own this very successful store in Tijuana. And it came a point where my drinking and using was so bad that I would only go there like at night to pick up the money and just get wasted, you know. And I'm there this particular night, and I have a bottle of tequila, a bottle of rum, because I like to chase my tequila with rum, and a mountain of dry goods. So the other thing I have on my desk is a gun, a loaded gun. And I am deliberating, I'm trying to find a good reason why I shouldn't blow my brains. And I can't find it, you know. So somehow I open one drawer, and it sounds like I'm making it up, but there was a magazine there that had a sign probably this big in red and white, and it said something to the fact that the Cocaine Anonymous hotline or something like that. Like, call them, call us before you do something stupid. And I called. And at that time, when I'm calling there, in San Diego, there is this guy that has 2-3 months of sobriety, and he's ready to go out and party. He's had enough sobriety. He doesn't want to be sober one more day. And he doesn't know how to get out of his house. So he's going to use plan number 3, which is, I'll go to my wife, I'll start a fight, I'll be righteous and get out of the house. And that way I'll go and drink and use with my friends. What he didn't know is that God had a plan for him and me. And all of a sudden, the telephone rang. And when Larry picked up, they told him, Larry, this is the hotline, and we would you take the call? Larry didn't know that his sponsor had put him in the 12-step list. And first he thought it was somebody was joking, you know. But finally he said, okay, put him on. And so we started talking, and we stayed talking probably, I don't know, 4 o'clock in the morning. And obviously I didn't blow my brains, otherwise I wouldn't be here. But it started a fantastic relationship. And we ended up by Larry convincing me to go to this place called La Mesa Men on a Friday. And so I arrived to La Mesa Men, and whoever has been over there, they're a very tough group. And you can't arrive and talk. They have to call you. And normally they don't call on you. It happened that the secretary of La Mesa Men that day, that night, was sick and asked somebody else to be the secretary. And that guy, I knew him from all those 15 years in and out. I knew him from La Jolla somewhere. And so I didn't know that you cannot raise your hand. So, you know, I asked him if I could speak, and he allowed me to. I told them what I just told you. And then I asked, I said, is Larry Dixon in the room? Because he's the guy I spoke with. And everybody stayed quiet. There was no Larry in the room. And I said, well, too bad. You know, for me, it was another proof that this thing was just BS, and that the guy just blah, blah me, and there is no such thing as all the things that he spoke about. And so I sat down. But later on, it came to be that Larry had his own issues about coming to me and speaking and saying, I am Larry. But all of a sudden, we got up to pray, and I moved from here to all the way over there for no particular reason, and I grabbed Larry's hand, you know? So he couldn't get away, so... Even then, he didn't tell me, but he managed to slip a card with his name in my jacket, which somehow I saw it, and we started talking, and became my sponsor, you know. And he is the guy that, with my wife, when I told you that we beat the INS, and I am on my way, they told me, get out, and it's 11 o'clock at night. And the two of them have been there from early morning. And I go out with my, you know, the brown bag with all my belongings and all that. And obviously they are hungry. And they say, come on, let's have a bite somewhere. And they take me to a Jack in the Box that was around there. And just like normal people, you know, we park, and the two of them go into the place to order what to eat, and I am stuck at the entrance. And I cannot believe that there are so many choices to eat. I mean, I could have my hamburger like this or like that, and I can add this or that, and the pictures and the whole thing. And I come from 9 months eating gruel, you know, and I start crying. I mean, at the door, I can't even walk in Jack in the Box. I'm crying because I had forgotten already what being free was all about. And it was only 9 months. It was not even that much. But I had forgotten. I had gotten accustomed already to that kind of life. It's very easy for somebody like me to get accustomed to the bad things. And at that point, I was crying, and they called me in, and I went like this, and I didn't know if I should order something, because I felt that I was not, you know, I don't deserve to do all that. Today, I bring people, and I take sponsees and I bring them to the best possible restaurant, and the, I see them feeling the way I was feeling there. They're holding the menu, and it's like this, and I tell them to order the best piece of steak and to get a super dinner, and I tell them it is available. The universe, all and everything is available to you. All you have to do is play the part, ask God for it, and it will be given to you. And they can't believe it, but they go for it. And they've had that experience, that one little experience, and that tells them, yes, it's possible. Freedom. If you've never been behind bars, thank God for that, that you didn't deserve and you didn't need that experience. But if you've been in there like I was, you would understand that being free has absolutely no price. Absolutely no price. And with us being hooked to alcohol and to dry goods, we lost our freedom a long time ago. A long time ago, we lost our freedom. And the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is giving us a second chance. This is the one place where a human being gets to have two lives in one. And we better use it. We better use it, because things get a lot worse if we don't appreciate it. I've had it in my life. I see it happen on a constant basis, just like it says in the How It Works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thorough follow our path. I can also see the other side of the coin, and it says, continuously I see people fail who do not follow our path. Constantly. And then the other part of that, how it works, it says, some of us will hold on to our old ideas, and the result will be nil until we let go absolutely. And I tell you that one thing I practice on a constant basis is I keep asking myself, what old ideas am I applying in my everyday living in the world? Am I applying these principles in all my affairs? Christian is your name? It was you. But you said that you knew the day, the time when you were, when you stopped lying. Well, congratulations. I don't know when I stopped lying. I know that I don't lie now. But when that happened, I don't know. But I do know that lying is going back to those, back to old ideas. And I know that always the result is nil. Always. I get pain. And I'm very bad with pain. You know, I really don't like pain of no kind. And I know that there is a possibility of living with God, in God, through God. I know it's possible. I've had those glimpses here and there. And I want to keep that experience in my life so that I can transmit it to the people that come around me. I do my best that the people that come to my space, they have the opportunity to experience transformation. The transformation that the Alcoholics Anonymous program presents to us. And I make sure that that is a something so that is there latent for them to grab. I am powerless over their life, but I am powerful over presenting them with the opportunity. I thank you very, very much for this invitation to participate in my own recovery, and thank you one more time. Bye.